From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made in 1986 when the Rochester City Council voted to make Rochester a city of sanctuaries. That resolution stressed the city's wish to support residents from all backgrounds and to offer comfort for people fleeing persecution. Well, next week, Rochester City Council will vote on a new resolution aimed at creating a 2017 version of what it really means to be a sanctuary city. Now, that's a term you've probably heard a lot, but what exactly does it mean? President Trump has said that his administration would review the list of sanctuary cities and counties, and there has been some saber-rattling about maybe cutting federal funding. But New York Attorney General Eric Schneiderman has offered guidance for local governments that want to be known as sanctuaries without violating federal law. And a number of other local governments are doing exactly that. So this hour, we're going to try to sort out how a city like Rochester can declare itself a sanctuary and offer support for immigrants, for workers, for people from all backgrounds, while still following through with federal laws and regulations, and whether this is going to be spreading to other municipalities, local governments in our region. Let me go ahead and welcome our guests for the hour. On the phone with us is Brian Curran. He's the Rochester City Attorney. Brian, welcome to the program. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
Jackie Ortiz is here. She's a member of Rochester City Council. Councilwoman Ortiz, thanks for being here.
Thank you for asking.
Kaylin Rich is director of the Genesee Valley Chapter of the New York Civil Liberties Union. Kaylin, welcome back to the program.
Glad to be here.
And Carly Fox is a senior worker rights advocate at the Worker Justice Center of New York. Carly, welcome to you as well.
Thanks, Evan.
Jackie, I'll start with you. As a member of City Council, do you expect a week from tonight, next week, that this resolution is going to pass? The new one.
So as far as I'm aware, I cannot speak for everyone.
Yeah.
Thus far, it seems that we have full support at this point in time from my colleagues on council for, updating this resolution here, and I believe so.
All right, so you can go back to 1986. I've got the language in front of me here about what it meant to be a city of sanctuaries in 1986. You were stressing before the program began, this is really a new version. It's not just sort of a massaging or an update of the 1986. That's how you view it?
Right. I think in this particular situation, there are different set of circumstances. And so I would, and Brian can probably elaborate a little bit more as far as the specifics, but I would say essentially we've started over in today's time, what it is that's required, and also guidelines that have been put forth by the AG's office to be able to provide an updated version of what is necessary today.
All right, before I turn over to Brian for some of the technicality here, let me just ask you, Jackie, first of all, you've heard Donald Trump say they want to review the list of sanctuary governments, sanctuary cities, that there is talk about, cutting funding or repercussions. Does that worry you?
At some level, on some level it does, but by the same token, I think that, again, trying to go based on the guidelines that have been put forth by the AG here in New York State, that there is enough here for us to be able to protect ourselves in regards to what is actually allowed on a local level for us to be able to do and not do. There are certain things that the federal law says that we do not have to do. And I think that that is exactly what we're trying to hold true to and ensure that there is a separation between the duties and responsibilities of the federal government versus those duties and responsibilities on the local level.
And why, as a member of Rochester City Council, do you think this is needed now?
We are representative of the people, and we have a huge number of immigrants here in this particular area, being a very much agricultural type of area. But overall, as representatives of the people, we don't just represent those who are only citizens of the United States. We represent all people that live within our districts. And if they live here, then that's important to me as well.
Okay, let me go ahead and read what the Attorney General of New York, Eric Schneiderman, put out, and then I'll ask Brian Curran to weigh in on how Rochester might be handling some of these specific ideas. This comes from Eric Schneiderman. He says that local New York law enforcement agencies can limit their participation in federal immigration enforcement activities in several ways, including by, number one, refusing to enforce non-judicial civil immigration warrants issued by Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE, or Customs and Border Protection, CBP. Number two, protecting New Yorkers' Fourth Amendment rights by denying federal requests to hold uncharged individuals in custody for more than 48 hours. Number three, limiting access of ICE and CBP agents to individuals currently in custody. And number four, limiting information gathering and reporting that will be used exclusively for federal immigration enforcement. That comes from Eric Schneiderman. Those four guidelines saying that you can do that and you're still not in violation of federal law. Brian, what do we expect to happen in Rochester?
Well, Evan, the primary takeaway that we in Rochester had from the Attorney General's guidance is that there's a need to define the boundary lines between what's an appropriate role for local government, for the city, and what's a federal responsibility. And in this case, it's clear that matters of immigration policy are federal responsibility, and it's not the responsibility of local government or local police to engage in immigration enforcement. We don't have the expertise, we don't have the resources, and you know, we don't want to be engaged in that type of activity, and we're not required to do that by federal law. So that's kind of the primary summary of the guidance we got from the Attorney General. I guess I could make an analogy. It's a crime to file a fraudulent income tax return, but the local police don't go out and investigate income tax fraud. They've got an entire federal agency to do that.
Okay, but
that's the case here as well.
But Brian, I'm going to do something dangerous. I'm going to try to get inside our president's head here and say, but Brian, if we want to get access to individuals in custody, why would you limit access of ICE and CBP agents who just want to get access to individuals in custody? That's one of the points that Eric Schneiderman makes that you can do, but why do that?
Well, in that particular case, that's not an issue that our city resolution directly addresses, and that's for the reason that it's not really applicable to the city's circumstances.
Sure.
Because that's dealing primarily with people who are in jail, so they're being held in jail either awaiting trial.
That would be a county issue, right?
Yeah, in the locally, the way things work here is if someone's arrested by the Rochester police, they're taken to the county jail, are booked there, and then become under the custody of the sheriff's department. Or if they're convicted of a crime, then they're sentenced to state prison. In either case, it would be those bodies that would have to deal with those kind of requests from the federal immigration authorities. The city would not be directly involved in that.
Okay, and so what is it then specifically, given the fact that this is often more of a county thing, and if you read the Washington Post recent explanation on sanctuary governments, it really does fall to, we often hear 11 million undocumented workers or undocumented immigrants in this country, mostly concentrated in 168 different counties. And Washington Post had a big breakdown on it, but they said this really is more of a county issue than a city. Where does this really fall into play in the city? Why does this matter from a city perspective then, Brian?
Well, there's a couple of things. Primarily, we're reaffirming that the city has always had, or at least for many years, has had a policy of non-discrimination and equal opportunity. So what that means is that we're affirming that city services are going to be provided to everybody within the city without regard to their immigration status, their nationality, their religion, or any other category. And within that, one of the sub-elements is that city employees, and particularly the police, aren't going to engage in going out and questioning people or asking them about their immigration status. The basic way the law is structured on this is that we're not required to collect that kind of information or engage in that type of inquiry. So what we're saying is the policy of the city government is not to collect that kind of information or to engage in enforcement of that law.
Okay, so let me ask both Carly Fox and Kaylin Rich then. Carly, a senior worker rights advocate at the Worker Justice Center of New York, and Kaylin is the director of the Genesee Valley chapter of the New York Civil Liberties Union. We have Jackie and Brian here from the city of Rochester. I haven't seen Monroe County or other local counties put out statements that are similar or resolutions that are similar. Kaylin, have you? I don't know of others.
So there are some in other places around the state, not in the Genesee Valley region that I'm aware of.
Okay,
yet.
So I haven't heard Monroe County, for example, saying we're going to create our own resolution that's similar to what the city of Rochester is doing. We think being a sanctuary county is something that's valuable. We've taken the AG's ideas. We're going to adopt that. I haven't heard that.
I haven't heard that yet either, and I think that's very important because, as Brian said, the jails are operated by the county.
You'd like to see that?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think that is, so we're working, Carly and I both are seeing each other on an almost daily basis, working with other advocates and activists and workers' rights advocates locally to try and push this issue, not just in Rochester, but in other municipalities and at the county level.
Okay. And Carly, when it comes to how county and other governments are handling it, how do you view that?
I think it's really unfortunate what's happening in our region of the country. If you go anywhere else around the country, you'd think we were at the Arizona border over here. We have such an inflated budget for the Border Patrol. They've cultivated relationships with local law enforcement in ways that we don't see in inland communities or other places. So all along the northern border, you see this collaboration, and it plays out like this, Evan. I just want to give some scenarios to sort of humanize what we're talking
sure,
about here.
Yes.
July 4th weekend, 2016, I was, you know, everybody's celebrating, it's festive, the weather's great, and I get a phone call from he actually works on a horse stables here in Fairport on Turk Hill Road, and he was in Border Patrol Customs office up there on Patterson Drive. He said he was in a taxi, went to send the money back to Mexico, and he was pulled over. The taxi driver was pulled over, and Border Patrol showed up about 15 minutes later and knocked on the door and pulled him out of the car. We're not sure exactly why and how Border Patrol showed up to the scene so fast, but what happens is that local law enforcement is facilitating these collaboration with Border Patrol so that people get scooped up. And this isn't the only place it happened. It happened in Irondequoit with a worker who was going to his independent medical exam for a workers' comp case. It happened in Henrietta for a deaf dairy worker who'd been here 15 years as a U.S. citizen child and was turned over by what we think, you know, it was most likely Monroe County Sheriff's Department to Border Patrol and put into deportation. Sort of, you know, orphaning a child, a U.S. citizen child, creating fear in U.S. citizen children that their parents are going to be taken away. Fear of the police, too. And I think we should talk about, as taxpayers, do we want resources to go towards law enforcement for carrying out federal policy, federal law, and helping facilitate that? And at the end of the day, it's a security issue. We are unsafe if we have populations we live amongst who are fearful of calling the police for just calling 911. You have a workplace accident, you're not going to call 911 because you could be triggering Border Patrol. You have a car along the side of the road, it's dangerous, you're not going to call for help. So I think you have victims of crimes, you have witnesses of crimes who largely fear the police. So a few years back, we started the Upstate Police Project to monitor police and try to chip away at this insane situation that we're dealing with in upstate New York. I also think Border Patrol is one of the most expensive interpreters we could be calling. A lot of the local law enforcement agencies will say, you know, we just recently met with Niagara County about an incident. They said, well, we can't afford to call language lines, so Border Patrol does it for us. They come, they speak Spanish, it's all great. You know, I said, well, as a taxpayer, that really concerns me that we're paying that much money for our, you know, interpreters. So I think that, you know, we really need to follow, and you know, New York State in some ways has some sanctuary policies that predate this Republican administration. We have the state police memorandum that we passed in December 2013, and it's a commitment by our state police to stop routinely calling Border Patrol. It's had a huge positive impact on folks. So with that victory, we're trying to continue to work for at the local level, and we're really glad that Rochester is looking at this.
Let me follow up with you in two ways here. I'm certainly wanting to make sure that I represent all listeners in our audience. And listeners, you want to jump in with any questions or phone calls when it comes to sanctuary cities, sanctuary counties, what this all means. You can call the program toll-free, 844-295-TALK. It's 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI. If you're in Rochester, 263-9994. Donald Trump was elected with more than 60 million votes. From a good amount of, you can't put everybody in the exact same category, but when you talk to reporters who've spent a lot of time, particularly in the Rust Belt, in communities where the factories are closed, they will tell you that the voters, particularly Trump voters, they don't care about Russia. They don't want to talk about foreign policy. What they do care about immigration, and they feel like illegal immigration is depressing their wages, it's taking their jobs. That's what a lot of Trump voters will say. They wanted more aggression in this issue, and that they are happy to see more aggression in this issue. So two questions. What do you say to those voters? Because I know you've heard that. And number two, are you seeing a change in this new administration? Is it more aggressive?
certainly more aggressive.
Okay.
I mean, we have what just happened in the last week. It was unprecedented numbers of targeted enforcement activity by
ICE.
Give
us an example of something that happened in the last 24, 48 hours.
Yesterday, 23 people were picked up at a 7-Eleven in Hamburg, New York, by Border Patrol. Let's not be confused. It was not an ICE targeted action. And I really am unprepared to talk at length about it. It looks like there was a massive racial profiling. They were construction workers in vans that were stopped at the store, and as far as we know, they're now going to be they're in detention. That kind of activity has, you know, let's not be confused. Obama was also part of historic levels of deportations, millions of deportations, more than any other president before him. And we've had a crisis like this on our hand that's just going to be exponential now under this Republican administration. I think, you know, let's look at Wyoming County, and I've talked to some farmers there, so I don't want to, you know, say everybody, but it's one of the, it is, I think, the biggest Trump-supporting county in our state. It's also the biggest dairy-producing county in our state, with more cows than there are people. So if you think about, and I do, my job is to visit dairy farms all over the state, and I've been doing that for 5 years and meeting with hundreds of workers. You know, a large majority of those workers are here out of status. And we all say, oh, Americans won't do these jobs. But really what's happened is we've degraded the conditions of work in agriculture so much. We've never actually gotten it up to par with others, like denying, you know, the right to have overtime or the right to organize, that you have Americans who they would do the work, but probably for twice the cost. So are we ready to pay twice the price for a gallon of milk? I mean, we all interacted with food today, which means we all interacted with someone who's undocumented, which means we all interacted with a sanctuary policy. We want folks to be here producing our food. We eat that food. We are growing. We're healthy. It's one thing we have to have. And yet we're completely making invisible the population that makes that food possible for us every day. And if we want to say thank you for producing that food, why don't you come out of the shadows and be welcomed in our communities? We need comprehensive, enforceable policies that welcome them. And at the local level, we can do that right now. We have a horrendous Republican administration that's chipping away at our constitutional rights left and right. But we, as a local community, and I'm not just talking about the city of Rochester. I very much want Monroe County to pass something. I very much want the town of Perry to stop calling Border Patrol for minor traffic violations, or what happened December 14th when a car's battery froze on a very cold night and the three guys were picked up by Border Patrol because one lone, and I call them the vigilantes amongst us, wanted to, you know, inflate his ego and called Border Patrol on them. And one of the guys, one of the three of them, is already deported back to Mexico for simply having a battery that died in the cold in a car. We could simply just impound the car, ticket them for not having a driver's license, but instead we're choosing to carry out federal policies.
Well, Carly says she wants to put faces to this. Laura in Fairport is calling in to do that. So go ahead, Laura.
Hi there. I'm calling because my husband, these policies that are being enacted don't just affect illegal immigrants, it also affects legal permanent residents of the United States. My husband is a green card holder, and we have children that are U.S. citizens, but there's an executive order that's on draft that says that any person who's not a U.S. citizen who received or receives any state funding, like a state program like Medicaid or Medicare, would be eligible for deportation. When you apply for Child Health Plus, which is a part of Medicaid, which we use for our children, you have to put in your income. And so he's a signator on that, and he's not a U.S. citizen. And we've been back and forth with immigration lawyers seeing if this does get signed, this is something that's going to affect us. This is something that could potentially mean that he could be removed. We just bought a home. You know, it's wild to think that all of this is happening, and we follow the rules. We've always followed the rules, and I was just calling to say that.
Laura, thanks for the phone call. Some thoughts there. I mean, Kaylin Rich, go ahead.
Sure. I mean, I want to speak a little bit about these threats that Trump is making right now around sanctuary cities, and that he's going to withdraw federal funds, et cetera, et cetera. I think one thing that we need to remember that Jackie already said explicitly is that we sanctuary city policies and the policy that is going to be voted on in Rochester next week, they don't embrace breaking the law. This is, we're just clarifying what is already true, and that honoring ICE detainers' request for immigration holds is voluntary, not mandatory. And we were just clarifying that for local law enforcement. And so we have to remember that because Trump does not currently have unilateral legal authority to carry out this threat to completely defund cities and states that are protecting people's rights. These sanctuary cities and counties and states are not breaking any laws. And an act of Congress would be what was actually needed to authorize the president to defund states and localities that engage in sanctuary work. So he's talking about doing something he doesn't have the authority to do. And we should remember that.
All right. Brian Kern, are you comfortable that that's the case?
Well, I think that is correct. I think the caller, though, points up one of the big concerns that, that the city has. I know the mayor and the city council are concerned about this, is that when you take an action in this area, the chilling effect on people who are not illegal, you know, who are in fact legally here in the United States, is significant because it creates uncertainty. That's part of the reason why, you know, the council resolution, I think, indicates that, you know, we don't want city employees to go out making these kind of inquiries about somebody's immigration status, because that gets you down the path of intimidating people who've done nothing wrong and who are valuable members of the community.
Let me grab Billy in Greece on the phone. Go ahead, Billy.
Yeah, I was just wondering, I'd like to ask the young lady, and if I could, how much of a minor infraction it was on Christmas Eve last year when that illegal alien had entered into the family on the west side of the county, and that 14-year-old girl ended up being dead. So I'm quite happy that guy's battery died before he drove away, and maybe he tagged somebody as well.
Hey, Billy, hold on. Can I ask you a question, though, Billy?
Go ahead, man.
Certainly, we can talk about individual tragedies, and there are times where I think we should. What's the crime rate among immigrants in this country?
I couldn't tell you, but put it this way, every illegal immigrant, there's your crime rate. It's crime. They're here. It's illegal. It's a crime.
Not
so
a crime.
I guess 100% is your answer.
Okay, so the answer is it's a lot lower. Immigrants commit a lot lower rate of crime, and there's probably a good reason for that. They understand that if they commit a crime, there's a chance they're not going to stay here. So they have a great...
So that's your progressive left reason for them to be here?
No, hold on, Billy, hold on. Let's work through this together. If the standard is any tragedy at all, a murder, a drunk driving death, which is awful, if the standard is if there's one, then we don't allow anybody to come to this country, that's a little limiting, right? I mean, I could point to a lot of white guys who've committed murder or, you know, drunk driving.
Absolutely.
We don't throw them all
but
out.
They're here illegally, as wrong as they are doing it.
Okay.
You know, I don't want a white guy raping my wife as much as an illegal Mexican. But he is illegal, and they are here illegally.
All right, so
we can also look at the farmers.
Dude, 100%. There's your answer.
All right,
when the farmers hire undocumented workers, isn't that a crime?
Well, no, because, you see, I grew up on a dairy farm, and we never needed illegal Mexicans to do the jobs. I don't buy that at all, and I do work in construction, and, yeah, they're driving down the wages. I got to ask the young lady, have you ever gotten your hands dirty on a farm or a construction site to even know what you're talking about when it comes to that?
Billy,
I don't think you do.
I actually really understand the frustration you have right now. Because there's
right.
no
well,
reason why Americans...
It's just a progressive left plan to slide us into a third world is all this is, and you're just a useful shill for an area you can't really understand.
All right, Billy, stay there, please. But I'm going to put you on hold. I'm going to bring you back in. I do want Carly to have a chance to respond. Go ahead, Carly.
Well, I just want to say that I think that when we're pitted against each other, when workers get pitted against each other, we all lose. We have an agricultural industry that's one of the most powerful lobbies in this country. They can get done what they need to get done. They can ensure that American workers have the same rights to as all workers in agriculture. And so that's horrible that we have displaced American workers in agriculture. And really, we need to increase the working conditions instead of having someone who's upset because they were displaced by other workers and pointing a finger at Mexicans as if they're the problem.
But Billy is saying anybody who's here without documentation, that's the crime. He says it's 100%. And unfortunately, in this country of laws, he wants them out.
Right.
And so he's saying We don't have to look at whether they're committing crimes. The fact that they're here without documentation is the crime. Carly?
I think we have to look at the profits that are made when we lower the floor in working conditions. And that's what I think this is really about, that there's something that, you know, the farmers want to have their cake and eat it too. The ag industry does. As consumers, we're all benefiting from this, that the food chain and our system of agriculture benefits from cheap labor. And when an American stands up and knows that they have rights under OSHA, or knows that they are not, that they are owed every penny that they worked, every hour, and that they'll stand up to wage theft versus someone who's here undocumented and maybe too scared to go forward because of all of this, you know, enforcement activity, then what happens is that the profits skyrocket in the milk and other ag industry, and workers pay the price of that. And I see Billy is caught up in that. I'm sorry that he had to leave agricultural work. That's not the answer. And if we really wanted a comprehensive immigration reform policy, what would we do is actually control the flows in to meet what's the need. What we've done is essentially look the other way, had a lot of people come in, and now with an administration that wants to come down on enforcement, the solution for agriculture is not to actually legalize and have, you know, the flows come in legally. It's to have guest workers and expand guest workers, which means then we're going to lose the families. We're going to lose the people who have committed to being here and raising families here, and just import single men as sort of hands to be, you know, churning out milk in the industry. And even Representative Schumer himself said, we're a nation of immigrants. We're not a nation of hands to
all
be
right.
doing this.
Jackie Ortiz, Councilwoman Ortiz is nodding to some of that. Go ahead. What do you think?
No, I absolutely agree. And, you know, I can understand the caller's frustration, but by the same token, I would echo, you know, your comments there. I mean, this is a nation of immigrants. And, you know, we've talked about...
He might say legal immigrants. I suspect that... And we'll let Billy jump back
in. I don't
know
if that's necessarily the case in our history. I mean, at some point in time, people have arrived here in different forms and fashions and had an entire process for themselves to go through. And not all of them were legal at the time. And I think that is something we actually have to explore more. We keep talking about this reform, but does anyone actually understand what that process looks like and how long it actually takes? I'm not asking for an expedited process. I'm asking for a reasonable process. And if anyone has actually talked to someone who has tried to do things the right way, I have one particular friend who it's over 20 years for them to actually acquire the necessary documents for them to be quote unquote legal. And I think that is completely irrational and unfair. I mean, when you look at some of the rules and regulations in other countries, I mean, if you look at Canada, 4 to 6 years of residing there is what's required to begin the process of going through seeking citizenship. I mean, over 20 years here in the United States, I mean, that's unreasonable. You want people to do things the right way, yet we put all these roadblocks and barriers in their way to be able to do that.
All right, Kaylin Rich, this is Billy saying what tens of millions of Americans are saying, no sanctuary cities, no sanctuary counties. Let's get tougher on enforcement. Start there. Go ahead.
Yes, absolutely. So I hear what Billy's saying, and I think there is, and Brian might want to jump in here too, because I think he spoke to this earlier. But when we say that, quote unquote, being illegal is a crime, that's not really entirely accurate. So immigration offenses are civil offenses. What does that mean? And we talk about this as though people are breaking the law, but it's a little less clear. So other examples of civil defenses, negotiating the terms of a will, for example, or going to court for a property dispute or things like that, right? IRS fraud, tax fraud, civil offense. And these are not things that law enforcement typically comes into your home, puts you in handcuffs, and takes you and arrests you for. In fact, most civil offenses are met with fines, and they're usually fairly low-level crimes in addition, right? But for immigration civil offenses, which again are not criminal offenses, and I think we have to remember that crossing the border without documentation is not a crime in the U.S. It is a civil offense. But the punishment for the civil offense is arrest, inhumane deportation proceedings, and being returned to a country where you may have no support, no family, you may even be unwelcome there or be unsafe there and separated from the family that you have here, including kids and possibly spouses or other family members who are legal, documented residents of the United States and now don't have the breadwinner in their family or don't have a parent with them. So really real consequences, and for something that is actually not a crime. And I think we have to be careful when we throw around that term because it does not apply in this case.
Okay, Brian, you want to add to that before I go back to Billy? Go ahead.
Yeah, I think that's right. It's part of what we're trying to focus in on in terms of giving directive to city employees, city police, is that you know, we want to focus on the prevention and deterrence of serious crime. So there's nothing in our sanctuary resolution that says if someone commits a crime, they're going to get off the hook because they happen to be an immigrant. They're going to be treated just like any other criminal and are going to be pursued. But at the same time, we're not going to use our limited police resources, which are really necessary to protect our citizens from violent crime, to pursue violations of immigration law that really are a federal responsibility and should not be treated at the same level.
Okay. Billy, you want to follow up? Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, that was a long-winded point you guys did not have. First of all, you don't need to spend a limited police, you know, a budget for this. I've always had a problem with the Pentagon, with their big budget, who can't defend the southern border. You have a Pentagon in the greatest militarized country in the world who can't defend their southern border because they're not meant to, because the overflow of the illegal immigration is meant to turn us right into a third world receivership of a one world government. It is a plan to kill this country.
Okay, now I got to let you go because we didn't want to get weird here. I mean, like, if we want to stay within the bounds of where a lot of people, we're not. Yeah, okay. Billy, listen, thanks for the phone call. I think a lot of what Billy is saying there, as our panel acknowledged, is what a lot of Americans, tens of millions of voters this election, agree with Billy there. They want stronger enforcement. We don't have to go to this one world government thing, but the other points Billy is trying to make there are, I think a lot of people feel that way. I think it's important that we have this rational conversation, that Kaylin and Brian are giving us the legal perspective that a civil offense versus a crime, those are important things that we often don't talk about when we discuss immigration. Let's get our only break of the hour. We're going to come back. We'll take more of your calls. If you want to call, 844-295-TALK. It's toll free, 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. We're talking about Rochester status as a city of sanctuaries, 1986. And then next week, next Tuesday night, City Council will consider a resolution to be a sanctuary city. That doesn't mean breaking federal law. It means staying within federal laws and guidelines while also trying to protect and respect people from all backgrounds. So we're discussing what that means with our guests. You heard Brian Curran on the phone, Rochester City Attorney, and Jackie Ortiz is a Rochester City Councilwoman, Kaylin Rich, Director of the Genesee Valley Chapter of the New York Civil Liberties Union, and Carly Fox, Senior Worker Rights Advocate at the Worker Justice Center of New York. We continue after this short break. I'm Evan Dawson. Wednesday on The Next Connections. First hour, some leading Republicans who have a long history in politics say it's time for the party to embrace a climate change plan, even a carbon tax. What would it look like? And how do these Republicans think they can convince members of Congress? We'll talk about it. Then in the second hour, we're talking about new guidelines designed to reduce the number of concussions and injuries in youth sports. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Before I get back to your phone calls, I want to ask Carly Fox a question because Carly, again, does a lot of work in worker justice. She probably meets a lot of people who feel like Billy, our recent caller. I don't think we are moving forward successfully as a country if we don't at least try to sit down together. Now, I cut Billy's call short because I didn't want to go down the conspiracy theory stuff, and I didn't want to disrespect him, but I don't want to get sidetracked either. But we have to at least be able to listen, right, Carly? I mean, Billy's viewpoint is not alone there, and we have to be able to at least calmly engage on these points. Otherwise, one side's going to make fun of the other. Mm-hmm. Oh, you're weak. Oh, you're evil. And where do we go from there? Nowhere, right?
Right. Yeah, and I think some of the conversations I'm starting to have with farmers has been really important for breaking some of that, breaking down some of the myths and some of the misunderstandings. So I think that the labor shortage that farmers talk about in this country is real. And some of the temporary industries, I can see where it's hard to all of a sudden overnight get a huge force to be able to pick as many apples as you need, where there could be some justification for having a guest worker program where workers come in. It's really important that we fought hard to keep the protections on those guest worker programs so that the program is run out of the Department of Labor, and that really there's important things that would protect workers like Billy, that he would be have a preference for the job. The jobs are announced to American workers, and that if an employer picks and hires a guest worker over an American worker, there's legal ramifications for that. And so I think that we need to fight. If we're going to have guest worker programs, we need to keep those strong regulations in place to protect American workers. For dairy, it's different. It's an industry that's 365 days a year, right? And we have people who we can hire. It doesn't have to be this rapid increase. So it's really concerning that two of our congressional representatives, both from New York State, are the ones who are proposing this new bill, the Family Farm Relief Act of 2017, H.R. 281, that would expand this guest worker program into dairies. I really just don't see that as a long-term solution to labor shortages or to worker rights issues and how to improve working conditions. Because when you, and as I've seen with imported workforce from Mexico, from Jamaica, who are in the apple orchards, there's a fear factor there. There's blacklisting when they go abroad, when they go back home. Their children, they have to leave them sometimes up to 10 months a year. And I think what we want, and so if we can just try to start to vision, and it's not, you know, mutually exclusive here, but we want a country where we welcome the kids. We welcome their wives to come in. We welcome families to integrate into our communities. There's an, I'm just going to profile one dairy family that lives in Avon. They work on a dairy farm close by, and they are, you know, stellar students, all the extracurriculars, you know, U.S. citizen children, contributing just in so many ways to the richness of that community. And that you can see in towns all over. And they're in real danger of being deported. They're ready to take some huge risks to fight so that they can have driver's licenses, so they can be legally driving. And they're taking the lead on our driver's license campaign, which we launched this past week. I have to make a plug for Green Light Driving Together. And that we really welcome and embrace and take out of the shadows the folks who are here working and living amongst us. And that would in turn raise the floor for all American workers, because it would lead to workers feeling safe to come forward if things aren't right in the workplace. And there's plenty of firms where things are fine. There's tons of workers I work with where everything's great and there's no labor concerns. But on the farms where there are, we really want to make sure that people are not fearful. And that's what really a good comprehensive sanctuary policy would embrace.
All right, let me get back to the phones because every line is lit up. And I'm going to go to Brighton. This is Nancy. Go ahead, Nancy.
Hi. Where do I start? Why is it so difficult for people to follow the law? These laws have been made years ago. President Clinton embraced, you know, monitoring the immigrants. President Obama, every president before President Trump. President Trump gets to do it, and it's like, oh, my God, another Hitler. He is not Hitler. He's trying to protect us, each and every one of us. There's laws, because nobody has ever enforced it. They don't even know how to do it. They're like scratching their head. What do I do first?
Nancy, what do you know about how many people were deported under the Obama administration?
A lot.
Okay.
A whole lot.
How many people were deported under the Obama administration?
Probably close to 100,000 or more.
Okay. Is that more or less than under George W. Bush?
That I'm not sure of.
Yeah. Okay. So
I mean, the hell that Trump is going through is uncalled for.
Right. Okay. You're painting a picture of basically no laws enforced, no one's deported, nothing's actually going on.
We have immigration laws.
Yes. Yeah. No, right. But what I'm saying is you are incorrect to say that there's no enforcement, nothing's happening. I mean, that's, you know, it doesn't do anybody any good if people come into a conversation and say things that are not true.
Okay. My brother just received a green card for Denmark. He was there. The immigration paper didn't go through in time. He had 10 days to get out of the country. So he said, fine, I'll come to home. He came home 3 days later. Oh, paperwork's good. Went back to Denmark. What's so difficult about that? He's a law-abiding American wanting to be a law-abiding Danish citizen.
What does that have to do with this conversation?
Well, he's an immigrant in that country. He is considered an immigrant in that country.
Are you under the impression there are people who come here and there's just no rules at all, and there's no enforcement? We don't even have a budget for this kind of thing. Nothing happens. And that's kind of the picture you're painting.
They do enforce it, but everybody seems to think like Trump is this Nazi guy wanting to do everything.
Okay. Do you support his temporary ban that he wanted from the seven countries that are primarily Muslim?
I do.
Okay. Okay. That's
and
fine.
And even though my aunts and uncles are Syrian. But, you know, years ago, we're all immigrants. Every single person in this country is an immigrant, except for the Native American Indian. But years ago, when my grandfathers came over here, they helped to rebuild this country to what it is today. They went to work all day. They stood in lines, took that little loaf of bread, brought it home. Here, honey, here's 25 cents. Go to the store, get milk for the kids and whatnot, and do what you can. And they were very proud to do that. They come here nowadays, and they're on the system. Who's paying for that, you and I?
They're on the system, Nancy. I mean, like,
they're on
do you
the,
really?
Are they coming here? Yes, really.
You think they just come here and they don't want to work? That's what your vision is of this? They don't. Nancy, there's some racism in that. That's not true. That is not true at all. I mean, are you talking to people who come here? They want to work. They want to raise families, right?
Yeah. But I see more and more people getting handouts. Sorry.
Thanks for the phone call, Nancy. Some thoughts from our panel on that?
I would just say that they're paying an incredible amount of money in taxes they'll never see a benefit from, and including into the Social Security system that they'll never retrieve. In fact, they're holding up our Social Security system right now. So it's actually the opposite. All of the sales taxes, property tax that is going into the system. And define criminal. And what are they protecting us from? I mean, really, what do we need to be protected from? As far as I can see, we are benefiting from having cheap food. We have cheap food so we can spend more money on other things.
But Nancy's saying that the immigrants are coming here and they don't want to work.
Right.
They're coming here to get on our system.
If someone is undocumented in this country, they will go hungry. They are not eligible for anything. In fact, injured workers, you know, they are eligible for workers' comp. Good thing most labor law is equally applied. Otherwise, our worker rights would be horrendous for everybody. But if you're on workers' comp and the case is being controverted, you have nothing to live on. You will go hungry and homeless.
Yeah, I would just invite Nancy. You seem like a nice person. You know, meet people. Talk to people. Sit down with people in their community. I mean, I meet people all the time who've come here and they just want to work. They don't want to be on the system at all. But Kaylin, to her point that she thinks laws are already on the books and just not being enforced. What do you think?
I think that's just patently false. I agree that laws are on the books. And I think what we're saying here is that we have separate entities to deal with the civil violation of being undocumented. So that's federal immigration authorities, ICE, and CBP, the Border Patrol. And then we also have law enforcement that deals with criminal issues in our city. That's the Rochester Police Department. In the county, it's the Monroe County Sheriff's Department. And there's other municipal law departments around here. And we were just saying, let's be clear about this is your job and this is your job. And there's, you know, we don't want to cross over. Federal immigration law is very complex. Local law enforcement shouldn't be doing federal immigration enforcement. It can expose our local police and sheriff's departments to civil liability and ultimately create massive costs to taxpayers in the form of defending lawsuits. So, again, Sanctuary Cities is not about breaking the law, and it's not about refusing to uphold the law. It's about clarifying what the role is of these various enforcement agencies and that it's voluntary for our local police to get involved in these civil matters.
All right, let me go back to the phones. Ross in Pittsford. Go ahead, Ross.
Yes, hi. Thanks for taking my call here.
Sure.
I've been listening to the conversation. I am actually an immigrant, a legal immigrant. Came over in 1968. Still have my green card, probably because of procrastination more than anything else. But it took us 12 years to come here from Italy. And what my parents did is they actually went to the embassy and applied to come in. We had two aunts, an aunt and an uncle here in the States that were born here when my grandfather came over in 1914. And we waited 12 years to come to this country, even though we had two family members that one worked for Wegmans, one worked for RG&E. They both owned homes. But I can tell you this, when my father and mother and all of us came in 1968, within a matter of a week, we had a job. Within a matter of a month, we had an apartment. Within a matter of a year, my father purchased a home. The problem here is that you're putting illegals in danger, and you're not, you're you know, it's a human nature thing where if you can't put food on the table, you will end up creating and causing possibly illegal activity. And so the thing to do is to have the people go to the embassies the right way, apply, and depending on the need of this country is the way these people should be allowed to come in, just like myself.
Yeah, Ross, I understand that point. What would you do with people who are here now in an undocumented fashion?
Okay, so again, the same situation. I'm a law-abiding citizen. I pay taxes and so forth. If I was to cause something that, I was to do some type of illegal activity, I think that those people need to be returned to the country of origin and reapply.
Okay.
It's no different than going to jail. I mean, is it better to go to jail or better to go sent back to your country of origin?
All 11 million?
No, the illegal. That's what we're talking about.
11 million undocumented.
The problem here is the problem with this conversation and all these conversations with regards to illegal immigration is that you're taking the situation where they are great people. Immigrants typically are wonderful people because they have we want to come to this country because of a better future for our families. But the issue is that you can't put them all in one big basket. The illegal immigrants that cause harm to the citizens of this country and to the legal immigrants of this country need to go. That's really what it comes down to.
The ones actually committing crimes? You mean like...
That's correct.
Okay.
The ones committing crimes.
But they are going.
This country needs immigrants. This country needs immigrants. But to the point of the other caller, I can tell you that you are lowering the wages. The inner cities and the rural areas are the ones who are suffering, okay? Because those jobs, like my dad, when he came over, he did a job that he didn't have to know anything except for put this here, do this. When this light turns on, you got to go and do this. My dad didn't know how to speak a word of English, okay? But there were jobs that he could do. The thing is that when someone is not educated, my dad had a fifth grade education, okay? There are lots of people that are born in this country that have a right to work in this country for those types of jobs. Those jobs are going to these people who are just walking across the border. That is not fair to the inner cities in particular and to the rural areas.
Ross, but before I let you go, I want to make sure I understand here. So what you're saying is if we've got roughly 11 million undocumented people in this country, and you are saying if they commit crimes, they hurt people, they've got to go, I think everybody understands that. What do you do with the vast, vast majority who are not committing crimes and hurting other people?
You know what? Let's just start there. Okay? Let's start there. That's the conversation. See, the conversation always goes to someplace else.
No,
okay.
The guy
Trump, this is conversation about Trump, is the guy is talking about illegals that are committing crimes.
No, Ross, you're going back on hold. With respect, baloney. This is not about just people committing crimes. This is not about 11 million people, but only the people that commit crimes. We're talking about what we do with human beings and their kids who might actually be citizens here. And that's not what Donald Trump is talking about. Donald Trump spent the campaign talking about 11 million people gone. And tens of millions of voters think that's a good thing. And that's okay. They have a right to. I want to entertain that. But don't move the goalposts here and pretend it's just talking about people who committed crimes. Everybody agrees if you commit violent crimes and you're undocumented, you should either be in prison or gone. That's not controversial. So go ahead, Ross. Finish it up. Go ahead.
Sure. I think that by allowing the current situation, and the reason we're at where we are with this 11 million is because previous administrations have just allowed this to happen. I know you're saying they've returned a whole bunch, millions. But at the same time, it was clear that it's like, come on in, any way you can get into this country, that's fine because we'll support you. The problem is you're putting these families in danger. There's trafficking. There's people that will abuse and these immigrants, take advantage of these immigrants. If you allow a process, a legal process, okay, mm-hmm. that is what you need to do to really give these people pride and to become part of this country. So I will say with the rest of what I would think I would do with the other 9 million, 8 million, whatever that number is sure, leave them, allow them to stay here, okay. register, and, you know, see who these people are, you know, see who they are, and so that way they can get a job
okay.
and don't have to be in fear all their lives over here, because that's what you're creating is fear.
I got to jump in, Russ, because we're going to lose you. I want to thank you for the phone call. I really appreciate the back and forth there. Carly, we're down to our last minute here, but at one point at the end there, you look like there was more common ground there.
No, there was. I was very impressed. I agree. We absolutely don't have a path to come into this country legally if someone wants to. If we want to talk about who are committing crimes, we also need to look at employers who
and Ross is saying bring them out of the shadows.
Who actively
right?
employ people. I mean, we are only blaming the victim here, but we're not looking at employers. That under Obama, 400,000 were deported last year, and that we need to look at who are criminals, because what the Republicans are saying is that we're deporting just the criminals. They are not criminals, and they committed very minor, like just trying to get a job offense.
Okay, and Kaylin Rich from the NYCLU, do you expect to work with any other local governments on sanctuary government policies going forward?
Oh, I think I and Carly and all the people around this table, hopefully, absolutely do. And I want to just say one thing to the last caller and Nancy's point as well.
Got to keep it tight. Go
really,
ahead.
Really tight, really quick. So I think there's a misunderstanding that Trump is doing this for the first time, but the federal government for nearly two decades has been using this enforcement-first approach. In fact, President Obama deported more people than any other president before him. So this is not a new issue or something where we're all ganging up on one president.
Yeah, that's why I asked Nancy if she knew that. I mean, a lot of people were deported under the Obama administration, and some progressives may not like to hear that, but it's true.
Right.
And I think what we have to deal with is facts and reality going forward. This is not my expertise, but I do want to deal with the reality on the ground. I want to thank all of our panelists for being here. Brian Curran, city attorney. Thanks, Brian. Thanks for hanging in there with us.
Thank you.
And Jackie Ortiz, Rochester City Council. Thank you, Jackie.
Thank you, Evan.
Kaylin Rich from the NYCLU. Thank you, Kaylin.
Thanks.
And Carly Fox from the Worker Justice Center of New York. Thank you, Carly.
Thank you, Evan.
Our thanks to Rob Braden, the engineer, Megan Mack, the producer. Lots of phone calls we couldn't even get to, so let's do it again soon. I'm Evan Dawson. Talk to you tomorrow.